When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, folks, it's Josh, and here's a fun fact. Your odds of getting nominated for an Academy Award go up if you appear on The Movies That Made Me. What you're about to hear is our conversation with Raman Barani, the writer and director of the fantastic movie The White Tiger. We did this a few weeks ago, and in the interim, while not a hell of a lot has changed for me and Joe, Raman's been nominated for the Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay, and rightly so. Here he is, Raman Barani.
This is The Movies That Made Me, with your hosts, Josh Olson
and Joe Dante.
We are here with Raman Barani, the writer and producer and director of one of my favorite movies this year, The White Tiger. I think it's safe to say I would have first kind of noticed your work with Man Push Cart, and then obviously into
Chop Shop.
Yes, of course. Which, by the way, I wanted to go back to Chop Shop because I haven't seen it in a long time, and then I just saw that it's coming out on Criterion in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so, yeah. Both Man Push Cart and Chop Shop, both of them.
That's
yeah.
great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Great. And then 99 Homes a couple of years ago, which I was a huge fan of, and now White Tiger, which is just I can't even. It's a fantastic film. I mean, It deserves all the accolades it's getting and then some. And that's one. I've sort of gotten to this place now where my wife and I will see a movie and go, we'll spend 20 minutes talking about how much we love it. And then sooner or later, one of us will go, oh, we got to get him on the show. and of course, you also have to check with Joe and make sure it's something he likes. But I think this one was a no-brainer. But yeah, no, thank you for joining us and taking a break from answering all the same questions.
I appreciate it.
And, we kind of wanted to, talk about, I guess, the movies that made you, what kind of stuff sort of inspired you and helped form your understanding of film and made you want to do it.
Well, there's so many, but I'm so happy to be with you. And I remember Joe, when we met, I think we all met in Venice, my God.
We did, and we've been on one of those boats.
Yeah, we were on one of the boats at the Venice Film Festival, which was great. So I'm happy to be here. And I don't know, you mentioned there's so many movies, we're not going to get through them all.
But, no, it's very difficult people think it's just so easy to just, well, I'll just throw together a bunch of titles. But that doesn't work if you really
think. No, we can be freewheeling, I think.
Yes.
And,
You said Man Push Cart. So just because you mentioned it, I remember that was my first film. I remember looking at a lot of Ho Xiao Shen films, the great Taiwanese director, like Boys from Feng Kuei, or A Time to Live, A Time to Die. Mm. I was just so taken by his cinema. I remember it was very hard to find the movies. You had to like get a VHS tape from somewhere or order a DVD from another region that would take months. This was back in 2002, 2003.
Right.
So it was hard to find things. And then I would watch them on my tube television, and Ho Xiao Shen films are a lot of wide shots. The characters are tiny in the frame. So it was like watching these minuscule things in the frame moving around. But I was just so taken by them. And his films had some direct impact on Man Push Cart. As did Killing of a Chinese Bookie.
Oh, wow.
Cassavetes in general has had an impact. Not only his films, but his spirit.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of just making movies and not asking for permission and just gathering your friends and doing it. But Killing of a Chinese Bookie, it's a nighttime movie. And that Man Push Cart is a nighttime movie. And we looked a lot at how he shot things at night. And also, I think it's also an existential movie, like Man Push Cart, where a man is trapped. He often seems to be making dumb decisions, making his life worse. And Man Push Cart had things like that, where the character seems unable to get out of his own way of getting ahead. So that was important. And then one of my favorite films, Bicycle Thieves, of course, has a huge impact on Man Push Cart.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense.
It's such a great film because, I mean, in general, the Italian neorealists and then the Iranian cinema, Kiarostami, Amir Nadiri, those La Terra Trema, Rome, Open City, that whole trilogy that Rossellini made, and then of course De Sica with Bicycle Thieves and Umberto D made a huge impact on me. And then in India, of course, Satyajit Ray. That style of cinema was really important to, I think, really deeply my first three films, but it still kind of has a presence on even a film like White Tiger, where you're still searching for real characters in real places, even shooting in real environments, or in 99 Homes, casting non-actors to play with the actors, mm-hmm. not controlling everything, letting things be. And so Bicycle Thieves had that. It's such an amazing film because the goal is so simple, right?
Yeah.
Let's say like Where is the Friend's House, Kiarostami's film, some decades later, that was very important to me. And he uses that to explore a society, right? He's like, I would like to explore six or seven neighborhoods in post-war Rome and understand different elements of my society and the different kinds of people in them, and make a comment about, or an exploration about, what I think is going on in my world, and do it with these characters who typically aren't focused on in movies, that are working class, barely making it, and explore a relationship between two characters, father and son, you know? And there won't be a clear ending. You know, the ending is just that one of those shots you want to clip out of the film and take it with you on a deserted island if you were to get stuck somewhere one day. Like, what shots would you take with you? This shot of the two hands, which is so simple but so powerful. And the movie ends on an emotional content, and a something more deep than plot.
Yeah.
The plot doesn't have to tie itself up. We don't have to answer all the questions, because who could answer all these questions? And that concept, I think, of understanding that you don't have to answer everything was important to me. And then later moved into some other world of kind of poetry with someone like Kiarostami, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing the Bicycle Thief or Bicycle Thieves.
No, here it was called.
Yeah, I did.
Originally. Yeah. Originally Bicycle Thief.
And I think I felt, you know, it showed at art house theaters, and I was a little bit young for that stuff, and somehow got dragged off to it thinking, oh God, I'm going to be bored senseless watching this thing. And, you know, I may have been 13 years old. And that was one of my first introductions to something so simple and so emotionally powerful. I mean, you just don't expect that from at an early stage, at least. I did not expect anything so shattering as that film. Yeah. And it's it was one of those sort of turning points for me in terms of kind of the kind of movies I pursued.
Speaking of movies with actors playing with non-actors, have you seen Nomadland yet?
I haven't had a chance to see it yet, no.
It's what's fascinating about it is that the non-actors in the movie, who are as good as the real actors and better than some other actors, they've been cast for themselves,
yeah,
for who they are,
sure.
You know, and they have long monologues, which may or may not have been scripted, but don't sound scripted. They sound like they're just talking about their lives, and it's incredibly effective, much more so than it would have been if you'd hired.
Oh, of course, yeah,
the same life.
Yeah, it's a strategy that always works. If you find the right person, it'll always work.
Right. Assuming you find the right.
Well, finding the right person. whether they're actors or not, that's the key.
Do you want to sort of walk through some chronologically, or how do you want to?
Well, I think we can go randomly.
Randomly, like, great. We love random.
Random.
We love random. Free association.
Well, we talk about, I mean, Where is a Friend's House? In general, Kiarostami made a very important mark on me. I would say Kiarostami Amir Naderi's film The Runner, Bahram Bezai's film Bashu, The Little Stranger, Mahmoud Boff's films, especially Bread and Flower Pot, Nune Goldun, which here was translated as Moment of Innocence. Those directors, those Iranian directors, and even Farrukh Farrukhzad's film, The House is Black, this is the Iranian poet, her film, she made one film about a leper colony, 30-minute film or so. Those films made a huge impact on me because of the way they were made. They were all in this kind of, I don't want to just say realism like the Italian neorealist. There was something, there was a poetic realism to them. There was some other element to them. And of course they were, because poetry is a huge part of Persian culture, and my parents are from Iran. I lived in Iran for 3 years. Part of going to Iran for 3 years after I finished college was to find myself, but it was also a cinematic pilgrimage. It was to go to the place where these films had come from, to try and understand how could these films have been made? What is this culture of my parents that I was raised with? I spoke Persian before I spoke English. I was writing in Persian language before I wrote in English. And poetry was a big part of the house, as in any Iranian house. Not that we were special. All Iranians grow up with poetry. So Hafez, Rumi, Ferdowsi, Shahid Saleh, these were just things that were read and talked about the way people talk about, other cultures talk about things that are important to them. And so going there and meeting some of these filmmakers, spending time with Kiarostami, meeting Mahmoud Boff, years later in New York, befriending Amir Naderi while making Man Pushcart, even hiring Amir Naderi's cinematographer, Michael Simmons, who had shot a few films for Amir, was part of the process of getting Man Pushcart even made. So those films were just so important to me. We talked about like the idea of casting non-actors, of rewriting your script for the non-actors, of writing the script because you met a non-actor, of filming in real locations, of not bothering to say action or cut, you know, which I, to this day, I still won't say on a set. All this came out of that exploration of those films. But of course, there's a different part of me, which is American. I have somehow the good fortune of having two ways of seeing. Mm. And so there were so many films that in American cinema that impacted me, mainly from the 70s. In fact, my whole interest in movies started in high school. I had a high school teacher, Van Brown, and he started randomly showing us movies, which I couldn't understand. I was like, my God, what a amazing class. They're just going to show some movies. But then, of course, he started talking about them as if there were serious things that one could discuss, like a book. I mean, normally I was into reading. I like reading a lot. We like talking about books, talking about novels and you know, whatever they were showing us in high school. Sometimes it was philosophical books. Sometimes it was fiction. But suddenly Van Brown showed us these movies in a classroom and talked about them as if these were things that a person would discuss. Mm. And that was very eye-opening to me. And mainly he was showing us films from the 70s, you know, The Conversation, mm. which to this day is such an important film for me, that it's such a rich movie. I mean, I think he was impacted by Hermann Hesse and so many other authors, Coppola. He's, of course, such a literate filmmaker. Yeah. But that film, or Mean Streets, made a big mark on me. And it was such a personal film. It felt like a human being had made it. I could see that it was makeable. There wasn't some other apparatus around it. Mm. And I thought in America, if you made a film, it had to have all these things that came with it. But that seemed like it was made by a man named Martin Scorsese and some of his friends.
Yeah, very much. Yep.
Which seemed achievable. And he was Italian-American. I was Iranian-American. I thought, oh, maybe this is in the zone of things I could make one day. And I thought if I could combine Mean Streets and Where is the Friend's House by Kiarostami, that maybe one day that would be a kind of movie I would understand or I could try and make one day. I don't know, didn't know what it meant, but it was something I was thinking about. And so these American films from the 70s became a way into understanding movies. You know, Nashville, Robert Altman, you know, And then like basically everything Robert Altman made, you know? So these movies that were character-based, there wasn't much story to them. And there seemed to be some improvisation in them, or he seemed to not only ignore genre, he seemed to turn genre inside out and do something different. So the idea that you could twist things around, that it could just be characters and not a bunch of stories, started to open up with someone like Robert Altman. And then I got kind of got hooked, and that's when you just, you know, got your parents to drive, or got my parents to drive me to Video Village on Robin Hood Road, you know, and I think red was VHS and blue was beta. We had VHS, so we would go for the red tab. It was a circular tab that you would pull off of a hook.
Right.
And it had a number written on it, and you would
box. They would have it back. Yeah.
You know what I mean, yeah. But you're younger.
No idea.
And no clue what we're talking about. There was a VHS box. It was empty because you didn't want someone to steal the tape. And you could read about the movie and look at the covers and be interested in them. And then, so then I just went and rented all the movies from the 70s. Then I went and rented the classic Hollywood section, which wasn't big because most of the movies were popular.
Right, when it started.
Modern films. Yeah, and I had no interest in any of those. And I didn't have much interest in action. I didn't have interest in science fiction much. So I mainly looked at 70s movies. Then I went to the classic Hollywood section. And then there was foreign films. That was what was left. So I went to those. And that's when I started to learn about foreign film. And you exhaust that pretty quickly at Video Village. So then you had to go to the public library and just rent everything they had, which was great because it was also free. And so that's when I came to understand about more than American 70s and Iranian cinema. Then I came to understand about all these other kinds of movies, you know. That was where I, as a teenager, came across Aguirre, The Wrath of God.
Oh, yeah.
And started to, you know, really fall in love with Werner Herzog as a filmmaker and as a person, you know, as an intellect, as a poet, as a thinker, you know. So Aguirre, The Wrath of God was unlike anything I had ever seen. And it was some mix between, I was like, my God, someone made a period movie handheld?
Yeah.
You know? and then the next shot would be this tableau. And I could see the costumes look like they had come out of the local theater shop. And like the carriage that they're carrying the daughter in looked like it was made out of plywood. They had just painted it yesterday. But none of it seemed to make any difference to me as I watched it. All it said to me was, this is achievable.
Mm-hmm.
I could make this movie. Not that I could make something this great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know what you mean. Yeah.
It's a movie is makeable again. This idea that I had when I looked at Mean Streets, but with Werner Herzog, it seemed even more achievable because as I started to read about him, he was such an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to come from nowhere and be attached to no one. And that somehow made sense to me because I had the same feeling. I didn't know anyone. As an immigrant, you're often isolated. You don't know how to connect with everyone. So I was never part of a group or a movement. And I didn't like groups and movements. And to this day, I don't like groups and movements. I tended to want to be on my own. I don't know if it's something about being Iranian. Iran has been invaded many times. And there have been many people who control the country. And so you put on your culture, you were trained to have a facade of acceptance, but deep down you were very individualistic and very nonconformist type people. So between that and being an immigrant in North Carolina, I assumed I would be on my own. And this part about Herzog, I really liked. And so Aguirre, The Wrath of God was something incredible. And then his other film he has so many movies that moved me, but The Enigma of Caspar Hauser was something else. That was so powerful. And then, of course, all his, let's say, supposed documentaries, some of which are fabricated.
Nice.
And the fabricated parts are my favorite parts of his documentaries. That became somebody very important to me.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that about him, because I remember sort of the German New Wave was I was fascinated by that.
There's Texas, my God.
Yeah, and but that was one of the things I never quite put my finger on it. But as much as like Wenders and Fassbinder and Herzog all seem to be sort of coming up around the same time, you don't get the sense that they were palling around like Lucas and Spielberg and Milius were back at the time. They were all very, very specific about what they were doing and very individual.
Yeah, I think so. I know they were in communication with one another, but they were on their own path. I think for me, Herzog the most on his own path because of where he went, you know, the places he would travel to make the films. And that interested me too, because I knew I did not really want to make movies about immigrant artists, or people I knew. I wanted to make films about people I didn't quite know. I wanted to make movies about worlds and people I would have to go learn about and meet and explore and have that amazing experience that journalists have of encountering strangers and strange worlds and writing about them.
Is that especially when I was starting out as a writer, that was one of the things that I would go through a place or I would read about a place. And it would just always start with, I wonder what it's like to live there. And then the sort of story would come out of that. Is that kind of a similar?
Yeah, totally. And another filmmaker like that I discovered in my high school years was Agnes Varda. Mm,
yeah.
And I saw Cleo, but I saw Vagabond. And that was so powerful, that film. I had not seen anything like that before. And again, the idea of a character film, which I think Scorsese was all about too. Those films were just character films. Yeah. I think plot seems so secondary to him. And it seemed the same in Varda, in both Cleo and Vagabond. But Vagabond especially, I found so powerful. And she, of course, has that in her documentaries too, where she will travel to a place and then that place and the people in that place will be in the movie and will inform the movie and the storytelling. And her films became very important to me. And again, like Herzog, they seemed makeable and she seemed totally on her own and independent. And they were both legends, but they seemed to still be making these independent movies. And that was inspiring because, you know, by the time, you know, I started to make films, Scorsese he had gone from independent to he was a made man, right? So the scale of the films became something not understandable to me. But Herzog and Varda, I could still understand how they were making them. They seemed understandable. Yeah, like they were made on that around the corner over here.
Do you still have that feeling about some movies? I mean, I still, you know, I've been in the business 30 years. I've been on the sets of some gigantic films, and I still see, you know, there are these Spielberg movies where, you know, he's got a battleship in the foreground and airplanes in the background and three different movie stars and various. And I can't even conceive of how he got a shot sometimes.
Yes, I admire it. I don't understand how to do that, but I admire that. But there's many things I like, but it's not any of my business. Like, I love Fellini, but what I love about Fellini is so many things, one of which is I have no conception of how to do any of them.
Right. Yes, exactly.
You know, it's so outside of the zone of my mind that it makes me more interested in it.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not saying I could make anything like Werner Herzog or Agnes Varda or Kiarostami, but I understand that it could be made. It's a camera, it's people, it's a location, and it's some vision, whatever your vision is.
Yeah.
You know? And then I got lucky to meet these people. To me, this was some other incredible thing that to work with Werner on a couple of my short films and then to go to Bolivia on one of his movies or to, you know, talk to Agnes and meet with her over the last decade before she passed away or to have met Kiarostami many times to talk to him. These things were somehow some kind of an incredible experience for me to know some of these filmmakers and talk to them and learn from them, or to know Amir Naderi, to talk to him and know him. Work with him in a couple of occasions was something extraordinary.
Mm, for sure, yeah.
Because you're entering into the movie you love somehow.
Yeah.
Well, it's inspiring. I mean, to meet people that you've admired, whose work you admire, and to get them, know them well enough to get to either work with them or talk to them, or, you know, have get advice from them, or get input from them, is it's a real
problem. It's amazing. I mean, I was able to show, you know, Werner a cut of White Tiger. I was not able to show Agnes because she had passed, but we had talked about the film many times, because she was so fascinated that I was going to go to India, or that I was able to show Amir Nandiri the film, or that, you know, to have these people. It's, and then you try to do the same thing. I just produced a film that was in Sundance called Lutsu. It's a Maltese American film made by Alex Camilleri, who was my assistant editor for almost a decade. And it's so in the vein. It's like La Terra Trema, you know. It's about fishermen in Malta. He cast two real fishermen. He spent 2.5 years researching it with these two fishermen, you know. And he made this beautiful film that premiered at Sundance, and his non-actor fisherman won the Best Acting Award.
Fantastic.
You know? So it's like the ability to talk to these new filmmakers, as some of my people I admired spoke to me, is also pretty awesome.
That makes sense. Have you, not to drag us down a different alley, but the British film from, I think it's 2019, Bait. It's a director named Mark Jenkin, and it's a gorgeous film. It's black and white, and shocked to find out that the lead is actually a comedian. But it's not at all what you expect. It's just a film about a small Cornish fishing village dealing with kind of the backdrop of gentrification and so forth.
I'd like to see it. It's about fishing.
It sounds very, very much like something you'd enjoy.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah,
I mean, in England, I don't know. I don't think Chop Chop could have existed, honestly, without Sweet 16. Ken Loach, written by Paul Laverty, the great screenwriter Paul Laverty, and his collaborations with Ken Loach. I found all of them so inspiring. Mm. Those movies are just incredible from Kes on. And then I just think whatever his connection with Paul Laverty has created these, like, 20 years or so or more of just these brilliant films.
Yeah.
And, so on the one hand, that in England, he was so inspiring. And then Mike Lee, that's just incredible. My God, those were those movies you would have to go to, because you want to watch these things from British television, like early Mike Lee or early Alan Clark. And you would have to go to Kim's Video.
Right. Yes.
When it existed, and you would get, they would have pirated versions of these movies, but it was fine because how else could we see them?
I think that's the first place I rented Abigail's Party.
Yeah.
I was kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
A trip to New York. Yeah. Yeah.
Or Meantime.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and that was the place you could get these things. So those guys were really so interesting. Contemporary, I think Andrea Arnold's really doing some really powerful films. But in terms of influences, that those two in England were
Fish Tank, right?
Yeah. That's now getting into, like, you're just admiring it as you're someone that we're in the same time zone almost. But
yeah, but that's an amazing film.
She's really good.
Yeah,
that was an awesome film.
Do you like to Mike Lee? Because I was thinking about, you know, what you said about not being able to conceive of how some things are made. I think the funny thing for me about Mike Lee is you see one of the movies and you kind of have that reaction, like, that's within the range of something I could. And then you hear how he does it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And now it seems inaccessible again because it's.
I mean, the I don't know. The closest I can imagine is, I know it's not the same at all, but I guess contemporary David O. Russell is doing something weird with talking to his actors while he's writing for months on end. And then, but I guess he's much more loose and changing everything in the moment, where it seems like Mike Lee and his cast have figured it out where they turn on the camera. But he's just incredible.
Yeah.
Those things are, I mean, other American films, like, again, going back to Scorsese and those eras, with just seeing Do the Right Thing for the first time, that was pretty powerful. I had not seen anything like that, you know.
It's still powerful.
Yeah.
It's still really, it's that and Malcolm X are really incredible. Those two films are really incredible. Speaking of which, I can't believe it. I just saw this week a movie I had never seen. I don't know how I didn't have never seen it. Nothing But a Man.
Oh wow. Yeah.
It's been close to
hard to find, but yeah.
YouTube. I watched it on YouTube.
Oh.
I don't know where else to find it, so I watched it on YouTube. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And it's incredible. It's been made by white people, but it should be one of the best American films about Black American life that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I think I found a DVD of it years and years ago after hearing about
it. And then Robert Young and Irwin Young. And Irwin Young had helped me so much at Duart to get my first film, Man Pushcart, finished. And then again, he helped me on Goodbye Solo, my third film. I didn't have money really to finish either film. And Irwin Young really went way.
But he never mentioned this. He never mentioned Nothing But a Man.
No, he always talked about his brother, but the movies his brother had directed. And in this case, Robert Young was just one of the two writers I saw in Nothing But a Man, but he wasn't the director. He never mentioned it to me. But it's an incredible movie.
Yeah. A great performance by Ivan Dixon, who
yeah.
wish had done yeah. more. Who also directed.
Oh, really?
He did a, it's an amazing film. And I keep meaning to sort of dig more into it but it was in the early 70s. It's called The Spook Who Sat by the Door, based on a book. And it's about the CIA's decision to allow Black agents into training. And this one guy goes into training, learns everything he can, and then he leaves and he becomes a revolutionary and wages war on America with an army. And he was lying to the studio about the movie he was making, apparently. He would send them dailies of sort of other things. And it's a very raw film, very choppy. A lot of it was shot like on seeming like sets for sitcoms or something. But it's a really, really fascinating film. Really, really.
Wow. What is the name again?
The
Spook Who Sat by the Door. There's a commentary by Bill Duke on it on our Trails from Hell website. Yes. He talks about it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's well worth seeing. I mean, it's got sort of some exploitation edges to it, but it's incredible. But yeah, Nothing But a Man is great. He didn't. I mean, outside of I want to say McHale's Navy, Hogan's Heroes. Joe, did Ivan Dixon do a lot? I feel like he didn't.
Well, he was a utilitarian actor, but he didn't get a lot of chances.
Yeah, yeah. Shame.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas. Plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
We didn't talk about Decalogue.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that...
All 10 of them.
Oh, yeah, all 10 of them. We will not talk about all 10, but Decalogue. I think I saw Red, White, and Blue first, because I think it was coming out at that time when I was a student. And then I went back and saw Decalogue and The Double Life of Veronique. I saw some of the other ones later, but the Decalogue, that was just mind-boggling. I remember as a student, I studied film theory at Columbia, but I had a couple screenwriting classes, and I remember I kept trying to everything I did had to be a trilogy based on a theme, you know, and it had to be. And of course, the screenwriting instructors were always like, there's no plot here. What is this? And I was like, yes, but Kieslowski, you know, and still he's so powerful. I did look a lot at Decalogue One. Decalogue One, I think is really extraordinary.
We should explain to viewers who are not familiar with Decalogue that it's not just one movie.
Yes.
Series.
Yeah, Decalogue is 10 one-hour films that Kieslowski made for Polish television. Each one is somehow inspired by one of the Ten Commandments, loosely inspired, but they're contemporary stories set in one communist housing block, and all the characters live in that housing complex. And occasionally, not in every episode of the 10 one-hour films, occasionally characters pass by one another in the background or hold a door for someone. And if, and three of the films, I believe, were made into longer feature films that were not an hour, but about an hour and a half, I believe, including a short film about love and a short film about murder or about killing. And that's five, Decalogue five. And we looked at that for White Tiger and won both because of the lens, the choice of lenses, where the camera is in relationship to the actor, and then the landscape and the psychological power of the lenses. And five around the murder, I thought were really, and the psychological state, I thought could be really helpful for the back half of Tiger, where the character is starting to lose it a little bit. But his films, the humanity in them, the let's say the idea of trying to film things that can't be filmed, you know, the spirit world or the metaphysical world that surrounds us, the shadow world around us, that was powerful to see.
Did you see those? Because I know they screened occasionally, sort of back in the day. Did you see them in a theater, or were those another like foreign videos you were tracking down?
Yeah, I remember initially VHS.
Yeah.
But you could see things in the theater. You could go down to, at that time, Theater 80, which is now a theater again, but it had turned into a cinema. They had good double bills. And then there was still, at that time, there was the Film Forum, and there was the Thalia, I believe, and Symphony Space. Symphony Space, I remember, actually, the author of The White Tiger, Arvind Adiga, and I went to see Wings of Desire on the big screen, and were just, that was an incredible experience, the Wenders film. I mean, Paris, Texas, and Wings of Desire, those were big, big impacts. And Oliver Stone too. That he made an impact on me as well.
Really? I'm guessing the earlier.
Yeah,
the hand.
No, but the he's a great director. You know, he people think about him because of his politics, but actually, he is a great director. And I think, along with Scorsese, he's the best director editor of his generation. Those two know how to edit better than anyone. Maybe Spike Lee as well. But I remember coming out of the theater at Haynes Mall, the Haynes Mall Theater in Winston-Salem, after watching JFK and being totally overwhelmed.
Yeah,
it's a pretty amazing
movie. It's unbelievable.
I mean, whether you want to get into the weeds, you know, how accurate it is in various ways or not, you know, I mean, just take it as a movie.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, it's a pretty amazing achievement.
Well, I mean, sometimes he was making two masterpieces in 1 year. I don't know, on a huge scale.
Yeah.
Or Born on the 4th of July, the camera work, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And the editing is incredible, and the structure. The movie's broken in half, right? He tosses out what everybody else would write and just goes to the two sections he wants and throw out everything else.
Yeah.
Which I find amazing.
Yeah, I think Salvador is one of the first movies I saw after I moved to Los Angeles. And it's one of those ones where I still remember the theater I was in. I could not believe what I had just seen.
Yeah, Salvador and Platoon, I think they came out in the same year.
Like about a year apart. Yeah, at most.
No, I think they came out the same year. I think they came out the same year. It's incredible.
Yeah. I hate them. yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Or Sidney Lumet, again, the American film from the 70s. Weirdly, Robert Bresson made an impact on me.
Sure.
Why weirdly?
I don't know, because I don't know. Some people love him and other people find it so boring they won't watch. But I was moved by the simplicity of the films.
I would say deliberate rather than boring. I mean, Pickpocket is an amazing film, and so is Joan of Arc.
I think most of them are amazing. I love Pickpocket, but O Hazard Baltazar, I think, is incredible. There's a really amazing scene in L'Argent, Money, the one based on the Tolstoy short story, where it's such a tragic story, right, about the corrupting powers of money. And this guy that had this normal job, but his life is ruined by this forged money, right? He's going down the wrong path, right, towards the crime and whatnot. And there's a sequence where we see him with his wife and his kid, and it's so simple. There's like a shot of him putting his cup of coffee down at the breakfast table. So we understand family breakfast in like one boring shot. And then we see like a kid, and then the kid's crying, of course. And then like, he's going to leave, and the wife goes to the door, and he walks down the stairs. He's already half gone. And the wife has one line of dialogue, and he has one line of dialogue, and he leaves. And in this like four or five shots and one line of dialogue, we understood marital strife over what he's up to. And it was so simply done.
Yeah.
And it was like you would see that scene, and then you would go to your script and be like, why is the scene three pages? And why are they talking so much? It could just be a look.
Yeah.
And a like, where are you going? And the character could just shut the door, and we would understand nothing left to be said.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's always a glorious and terrifying realization for a screenwriter, I find, is that moment you realize that, yeah, some of your best work can be expressed in a look. You're almost not necessary.
Totally. Totally.
But I want you, when you're talking about Decalogue, I keep doing this. I'm sorry, but it reminded me of, have you seen Steve McQueen's Small Axe films this past year?
I saw two so far, and they were really good, what I saw.
Yeah, because it hadn't occurred to me before, but he's kind of doing Decalogue, isn't he?
They were really good.
Yeah.
I think it's episode two,
the house party.
Yeah, the camera movements were really beautiful.
I mean, the fact that there's a scene where the entire film takes place in a house party one night. But I mean, there's a scene. Have you seen them yet, Joe? Or
again? Yeah, I haven't.
Because there's a scene where, you know, it's a needle drop and people start dancing, and they go through three entire songs, and it's just people dancing.
Yeah,
and it's amazing. It's just
I like the camera work. He loosened up things a little bit,
yeah,
which I thought really helped.
Yes.
Compared to some of his other films, I found this to be more loose and free in a way.
It doesn't feel anything like his other movies. Yeah, I loved them. But yeah, no, good stuff. Cool. What else?
What else? gosh, On the Waterfront.
Oh yeah,
that was a good film. It was a good film because it was about something, you know. It was about something. It was about a specific place, specific people. You know, they felt like the real people, you know. Mm-hmm. I know it has melodrama in it, that's fine, but it had some purpose to be there, you know. It had reason to exist, and I liked how specific the location was and the milieu and the characters. I thought it was a very powerful film.
And that amazing score, which,
no,
it's a glorious film, and I can see all those influences in your work. You know, it's you focus in hard on characters and in specific situations, some of them quite small, they're very much about something larger, obviously.
Yes,
which is not an easy thing to do.
I always loved Antonioni as well. Along with John Ford, if you look at Antonioni, they each have a deep respect for landscape, you know, one urban, mm-hmm. one natural. But you really came to understand, I think Werner Herzog the same, that location is not a backdrop, but it's actually character, you know, and that, I don't know, Le Cliché clips. That Antonioni film had a lot of impact on Van Pushcart as well. Mm. The Dardenne brothers were important for me. That was it. Then, I guess the modern version of Bresson in a way. That was really helpful for a film like Chop Shop. You know,
mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah,
yeah.
What's if you can sort of one of the things, and you've given us a lot of stuff that is not come up every week on the show, which is great. Sort of one of our mandates is where this is good. We're sort of trying to make up for the kind of, you know, there's the utter implosion of any kind of there's nobody out there anymore kind of gatekeeping. You know, we all grew up TV and sort of repertory theaters, and there were, you know, if you were 10 years old, you wouldn't necessarily seek out, say, Casablanca, but you'd turn on the TV and it was one of three choices, you know.
Yeah.
That's just all gone. And it's all become very decentralized. And so we're sort of hopeful that, you know, we can push people towards movies they wouldn't ordinarily see.
However, we do live at a time when it's easier to see these movies than it ever was.
Yeah, my God. I mean,
the Criterion Collection alone has pushed to the fore movies that most people, I would say half their collection, nobody'd ever heard of, really. Because they just didn't, they only played small art theaters or they never came to America at all. And now they're, you know, part of the conversation. And interestingly, it's coincided with a time when people can't go to see movies on a big screen and they're trapped in their homes and they're trapped with their television screens or, you know, any way that they can get outside, you know, influence, it has to come into their houses because they can't leave. And so I would like to think that one of the pluses of this awful pandemic is that people have had a chance to discover, to have the time to discover things that ordinarily they would just say, well, I just don't have time for that.
Yeah. I agree totally.
Well, yeah, in that spirit, sort of my own education in terms of Iranian film is not great. I mean, I know, I think Separation and White Balloon and maybe one or two others. Is there, like, if you were going to point somebody towards a couple of films coming out of Iran to kind of kickstart that process, what would some of yours?
Well, Amir Naderi is the runner, for sure. Kiarostami, you know, you could see on Criterion right now the Kokar trilogy. Kokar is a region where he made Where is the Friend's House. It was then hit by an earthquake, a very devastating earthquake and deadly one. And he returned to see if the kids from Where is the Friend's House were alive. He went with his own son, Kiarostami. So then he made a movie called Life and Nothing Else, where it's about a director and his son going to see if these kids from Where is the Friend's House are alive. That's what the movie's about. And then Under the Olive Trees, sometimes translated to Through the Olive Trees, was the third part of this trilogy. And it was about the making of the second film. And it's just an amazing movie. All three of them are amazing. And then for Kiarostami, you could then see Close Up, which is often now in the top 10 films ever made.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yes. I've seen. Yep.
Yeah, it's an amazing film. That's also on Criterion.
Yeah.
It's a great film. It's about a man who, it's a really, really, it's an incredible film. For the people who don't, your audience doesn't know Kiarostami, I could tell you this. Godard said cinema began with D.W. Griffith and ended with Kiarostami, meaning there's nowhere else to go, he thought. Like, that was the end of the whole thing.
That's funny.
And so Close Up is about a real life, a man was mistaken for another very famous Iranian director named Mohsen Makhmalbaf, whose movie I mentioned earlier, A Moment of Innocence, aka Bread in the Flower Pot. And this man went into these people's lives pretending to be this director and said, I'm going to make a movie about you. And in fact, the man loved movies, but he was nothing. He had no job. He was a poor man. But he loved movies, and he loved Makhmalbaf movies. And suddenly someone thought he was Makhmalbaf. And they ended up finding out that he was an imposter, and it became a court case, and it went into the news. And then Makhmalbaf wanted to make a movie about it. And Kiarostami convinced him not to, so that he could make it himself, which is what he did.
Oh, that's dirty pool.
Yeah. And he made this great movie that's part fiction, part documentary. You can't quite tell which parts are real and which parts are not. And it's a brilliant, brilliant film that your audience could watch on Criterion right now. I think those are a really great place. Makhmalbaf's film, Bread in the Flower Pot, is beautiful. He has another really wonderful film called Gabbe. I honestly like The Separation, but I find all these films more interesting. To me, they're more cinema, less theater. Although I like The Separation, but still, I think these are more elemental to cinema language. Or Bahram Bezaei's film Bashu, A Little Stranger, I thought for me, it made a big impact on me. But, and then, as I mentioned, Farrukh Abarrukhzad's film, which you can probably find on YouTube, The House is Black. That's a very harsh film because it's about a leper colony. It's not easy, but it's powerful, powerful stuff.
And but it's a narrative drama or it's a documentary?
Docu-poetry.
Got it. Yes.
Yeah. She's one of the most famous female poets in Iranian history. Hmm. Died tragically in a car crash. Way too young.
God, well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Yeah.
And broadening our horizons.
Indeed. Brahman, I know White Tiger is now on Netflix. I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's
thank you.
Gorgeous. And sorry, I only knew about Chop Shop. I didn't realize Man Push Cart is also coming on Criterion or already on?
Yeah, it is. And I have three short films on Criterion that I made. All of them I made after my features. One is Plastic Bag with Werner Herzog.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, these are on the channel, you mean?
They're on the channel, oh, yeah. Okay. Man Push Cart and Chop Shop. I guess they'll come on the channel, but the discs will be available soon.
Yeah.
But I have three short films on the channel. Plastic Bag, which is a 18-minute short with Werner Herzog as the consciousness of a plastic bag. It is a fiction.
But he doesn't eat his shoe. Right?
No, he doesn't eat his shoe. No.
It seems almost too easy. If you're going to make a film about a plastic bag, who else would you cast as it?
Yes. Yeah, and then I have two short documentaries that are there.
What are they called?
One is called Bloodkin, and one is called Lift You Up.
Fantastic. And those are streaming now.
Yeah.
Great,
yeah.
Great. Great. Well, terrific. Well, thank you very much. We'll leave you to go back to answering all the same questions.
And good luck getting it in all the awards you're going to win.
Yes. Oh, enjoy that ride.
I don't know about that.
I know, but that's not why we do this.
But I'm so happy about what's so weird about streaming now, because White Tiger is on Netflix and was made for Netflix. But coming from independent movies, it's so wild that on one day the movie is available to 200 million people in 190 countries.
Yeah.
It's already been seen by 30 million people in less than a month. It's incredible to me.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You get emails and messages from people in so many different parts of the world. It's kind of incredible. I like
it. It almost makes you feel there's a point to it.
I tell you, it really does. You know, it's kind of amazing. But I'm waiting for cinemas to come back.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Well, so are
Very
we.
Much.
Might be a little while, though.
Thank you guys so much.
Great.
Thanks a
Thank
lot.
You. Take care.
Enjoyed it. Wonderful. Thanks.
Great to see you again.
You too. Bye-bye.
Our show was recorded from several well-stocked bunkers. We can't wait to get back to beautiful downtown Burbank. We're the official podcast of TrailersFromHell.com, the best damn movie website there is. Our engineer is the composer Don Barrett, who also transmogrified, produced, and created our theme song. This is Josh Olson for the Movies That Made Me. Stay safe out there, folks.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.